He's strong, and this is VOA 1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant and Pete Musto. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
Even before the new coronavirus reached Argentina, healthcare workers there were already severely overworked. Most were often working more than 12 hours a day at several jobs just to survive the country's inflation. The health crisis has caused even harder days on the job. The workers are now caring for the seriously ill. And they are trying to comfort patients who are dying of COVID-19, unable to say goodbye to family and friends. Some workers still go home at night to their families after taking safety measures. Others, fearing they will spread the virus to loved ones, have moved into hotels. Some have sent their children to live with relatives. Dr. Matias Norte is a surgeon who specializes in cancer cases. But he is also helping treat COVID-19 cases at the three hospitals where he works. He sometimes has to drive an hour to get home in the capital city of Buenos Aires. Norte says he feels so happy when he gets home each day that he forgets everything. But a kiss from his wife, Silvina Caceres Monier, must wait until he showers. Nurse Andrea Cortez also goes home after work to be with her partner, Ariel. But they have not kissed or fully held each other in nearly 4 months. She also has not seen her 27-year-old daughter for nearly that long. Cortez works an average of 17 hours a day at two hospitals in Buenos Aires. She worries all the time about bringing the virus home. Cortez says the fear makes her hold this distance with the family until it's all over because I love them and I have to take care of them. Doctors, nurses, and other health workers make up 7% of the more than 130,000 confirmed infections reported by Argentina's government. Juan José Comas completed his medical education last year, but still must do training before taking his final examination. Since the start of the health crisis, he has treated a lot of patients. Comas tested positive for the coronavirus, but did not show signs of it. He has been sharing a hotel room with three doctors since leaving his parents' home in April to protect them. He told the Associated Press that he has gone a few times to visit his parents behind the gate. I'm Alice Bryant.
Thank you.
The amount of plastic waste flowing into the ocean could triple in the next 20 years unless businesses and governments act to reduce plastic production. That warning comes from a new study that appeared recently in the publication Science. The study was carried out by scientists and industry experts for the Pew Charitable Trusts and Systemic, an advising business. The study, called Breaking the Plastic Wave, identified measures that could reduce plastic pollution that gets into the ocean by 80%. If no action is taken, however, the amount of plastic going into the sea every year will rise from 11 million metric tons to 29 million metric tons by 2040, the study said. Plastic pollution is something that affects everyone. It's not a your problem and not my problem. It's not one country's problem. It's everyone's problem, said Winnie Lau. She is a senior official at Pew and one of the lead writers of the study. It's going to get worse if we don't do anything, she added. The report suggests redirecting hundreds of billions of dollars in plastic production investment into alternative materials. The report also calls for recycling centers and waste collection expansion in developing countries. Such action would require a sharp change in how the energy industry does things. The industry has been building new chemical plants around the world to increase plastic output. This is happening as the industry's traditional fuel business has decreased because of a rise in cleaner energy sources. The amount of plastic manufactured each year has been climbing since 1950, when 2 million metric tons were produced. By 2017, that number had risen to 348 million metric tons. The study recommends that governments put in place laws to discourage new plastic production and provide more financial support for reusable alternatives. The plastic industry has pushed back against government bans on single-use plastic products. Some of the biggest buyers of plastic are major companies like Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, Nestle, and Unilever. These companies have all made promises to use a greater amount of recycled material in the future. But current promises from businesses and governments will not reduce plastic waste enough. In fact, the Pew and Systemic study found that current measures would only reduce the plastic flowing into the ocean by 7% by 2040. To cut the flow of ocean plastic by 80%, the study said that paper or other materials that break down naturally must be used instead of single-use plastic.
School districts in the United States that plan to reopen in the autumn are struggling with whether to require teachers and students to wear face coverings. The issue has divided schools in both cities and rural areas, resulting in widely different safety guidelines. The divide has been influenced by politics in some areas, such as the Midwestern state of Iowa. Democratic-leaning cities like Des Moines and Iowa City have required face masks to limit the spread of the coronavirus. But smaller, more conservative communities have left the decision to parents. Mike McGrory heads the Ottumwa School District in Iowa's southeast corner, with 4,700 students. He told the Associated Press, "You have to be very sensitive and realize there are lots of perspectives." McGrory said it would have been easier if state health officials had issued exact rules. But when that did not happen, the district decided to back the state education department's guidance not to require masks. Many states are calling for teachers to wear masks, including Alaska, Connecticut, California, Maine, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Nevada, Ohio, Utah, and Washington. Some will require masks for students. Many other states are leaving the decision to local officials. Rob Murphy is a doctor and infectious disease expert at Northwestern University in Chicago. He said, from a medical perspective, it should be an easy choice. Wear a mask in school. Schools should take other steps, too, including reducing class sizes, limiting contact sports, and testing students and teachers before they enter school buildings, Murphy said. But he added that a first and necessary step should be a mask requirement. Murphy called the current lack of direction a no-plan plan. "It's all over the place," Murphy said. "There's nobody at the wheel." Even among health experts, there are disagreements. Many districts point to a recommendation by the American Academy of Pediatrics. The organization suggests that school officials urge the use of face coverings without making it a requirement. The group said its recommendation is based on the need for students to return to school and the fact that coverings can affect learning for some children. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has recommended that students and teachers wear masks whenever possible. Other countries where schools have reopened have not required all students to wear face coverings. In France, public schools reopened briefly before a summer break with no sign of widespread virus spread. Face coverings were only required for older students, but students stayed in the same classroom all day. In Norway, preschools reopened first, followed by others. Children were put in smaller groups that stayed together all day. Face coverings were not required. Iowa's largely rural Western Dubuque Community School District will let students and their parents choose. Superintendent Rick Culpitz has heard the arguments for face coverings, but he also hears from people who are opposed. "It's a lose-lose situation," Culpitz said. "We tried to take the political piece out of it, but there's no way to make everyone happy." Iowa is among many states that have left the face covering decision to local school officials. The state's education department's recommendation against a mask requirement was based on the idea that a requirement would lead to many more questions. This includes questions about what face coverings are acceptable, how the rules would be enforced, and what exceptions could be made. "There are just so many things that go into it," Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, a Republican, said in explaining why she opposes a school mask requirement. If somebody wears the same mask for 7 days without washing it or changing it out, is it actually doing what it's supposed to be doing? Who's going to monitor that? I'm Pete Musto.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Dwight Eisenhower. He took office in 1953 and was re-elected in 1956. Eisenhower was famous before he became President of the United States. He was a general in World War II and led the Allied invasion of Europe. The attack began with the air and sea operation called D-Day. As president, Eisenhower became known for his efforts to keep peace. He tried to have good relations with the Soviet Union especially. He believed one of the best ways to do that was to build America's military strength. When Americans think of Eisenhower, they often note the growth of the U.S. defense industry and tensions with the Soviet Union. Those tensions became known as the Cold War and lasted long after Eisenhower left office. Dwight David Eisenhower was born in Texas, but raised in the state of Kansas. His parents had 7 sons. The future president was the third. Eisenhower's parents did not have much money. His father worked as a mechanic. His mother was a member of the Mennonite Church, which opposed war and violence for any reason. But young Dwight, who used the nickname Ike, enjoyed reading about military history and doing physical activities. He played football and liked hunting and fishing. When he finished high school, Eisenhower earned a position at the U.S. Military Academy, better known as West Point. At first, he did not excel as a soldier. Eisenhower tested some of the Army's traditional ideas. But in time, military leaders came to value Eisenhower's ability to think independently and strategically. He accepted increasingly important positions. In only a few years, Eisenhower took command of Allied troops during World War II. He directed invasions in North Africa, Italy, and finally in Western Europe. His words, "Okay, let's go," launched the invasion of Normandy, France, on June 6, 1944. Eisenhower's personal life changed during his military years. He married a young woman named Mamie Dowd in 1916. The following year, they had a son named Dowd Dwight. However, the boy became sick and died at the age of 3. In 1922, the Eisenhowers had a second son named John. Mamie and the boy spent many months separated from Dwight. And even when the family was together, they were often moving from place to place. They moved nearly 30 times during Eisenhower's military career. After he retired from active duty in the Army, Eisenhower accepted a position as president of Columbia University in New York. Then he returned to the military to lead NATO forces in Europe. In the early 1950s, Republican Party officials urged Eisenhower to be their candidate for president. Many Americans approved of Eisenhower's war record, his efforts to contain communism, and his wide smile. They seemed to agree with his campaign slogan, "I like Ike," and decisively elected him into office. His 1952 election brought an end to the Democratic Party's 20-year control of the White House. Although he declared himself a Republican, Eisenhower was a political moderate in many of his ideas. He continued some of the domestic policies of former presidents Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman. Eisenhower also wanted the government to invest in public works projects. Notably, he approved a bill to build more than 65,000 kilometers of roads. Today, the U.S. highway system connects all parts of the country and supports the nation's economy. Eisenhower also worked hard to have peaceful relations with other countries. In his first months as president, he signed the agreement that ended fighting in the Korean War. He also tried to ease tensions between the United States and Soviet Union. In 1952, the U.S. government tested the first hydrogen bomb. It was even more powerful than the atomic bomb. Soon, the Soviet Union carried out a hydrogen bomb test of its own. The two countries became actively involved in an arms race that made many people around the world very, very nervous. Eisenhower did not fully trust the Soviet leadership, but made some efforts to achieve an agreement on arms control. At the same time, he approved a plan for U.S. airplanes to fly secretly over the Soviet Union to gather information. In 1959, Eisenhower and the Soviet leader, Nikita Khrushchev, met in the American state of Maryland. Modern presidents use a mountain retreat there, which Eisenhower called Camp David, after his grandson. The U.S. and Soviet officials did not develop a treaty, but they did agree to meet again the following year. However, the agreement collapsed. In 1960, Soviet missiles brought down one of the American spy planes, called a U-2. The pilot was captured. At first, Eisenhower's government denied that the plane was secretly gathering information. Officials said it was only a weather aircraft. But then the Soviets produced evidence that the U-2 was, in fact, a spy plane. Khrushchev said he could not trust Eisenhower and his government, and he ended talks on limiting or disarming nuclear weapons. During his two terms in office, Eisenhower tried many ways to avoid all-out war. He approved other secret actions, especially by the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA. Eisenhower sent U.S. Marines into Lebanon to try to end unrest there, and he decided against ordering airstrikes on Viet Minh forces when they surrounded French troops at Dien Bien Phu, Vietnam. In all these efforts, Eisenhower used the threat of U.S. military power to help achieve his foreign policy goals. But he warned Americans against letting businesses aiding the defense industry become too powerful. In his final speech as president, Eisenhower spoke of the dangers of what he called the military-industrial complex. He did not want the country to depend only on war to resolve conflicts. And he did not want the U.S. government to spend so much on weapons that it could not provide other services to Americans. Shortly after that speech, Eisenhower retired to a home he and his wife had bought in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Many Americans were sad to see him go. Eisenhower's presidency lasted most of the 1950s. During that time, the American economy was, for the most part, strong. Many Americans had enough money to buy homes and televisions. At the same time, Eisenhower's presidency was a time of unease. Racial discrimination was intense. In 1954, the U.S. Supreme Court declared that states could no longer have separate public schools for white and black students. Some whites strongly objected to the decision. They tried to block black students from entering schools, sometimes using violence. Eisenhower sent troops to enforce the federal law to desegregate public schools. Later, Eisenhower used the power of his office to enforce other desegregation and voting rights laws. But he did not speak up strongly in support of civil rights. He thought both those who blocked civil rights legislation and those who demanded it were extreme. Eisenhower also did not publicly criticize Senator Joseph McCarthy, who accused the U.S. government of protecting Soviet spies. Eisenhower strongly disliked McCarthy, but he permitted the Red Scare to continue until the lawmaker could discredit himself. Finally, despite Eisenhower's efforts, the Cold War did not end. In fact, tensions between the U.S. and Soviet Union increased. Although Eisenhower succeeded in keeping the country out of war, many events during his presidency created the conditions for later conflicts. Nevertheless, Eisenhower was a popular president both before, during, and after his time in office. During his final years, he wrote several books about his life, traveled, and advised later presidents. He had suffered a heart attack during his first term in office and eventually suffered another one. He died at the age of 78 with his family by his side. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.